Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 127. I'm recording it on Thursday, April 23rd, 2009. The P10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is DD Groove. And the title of the podcast is Dave Ramsey is Not a Straight Shooter. That's a simple declarative sentence. Dave Ramsey is not a straight shooter. Sometimes the simple declarative sentences are the hardest ones to write. Took me a long time to write that sentence. I knew that I was going to need to write that sentence. I don't know how far, but it goes a long ways back. This has been on, I think the way it started really is there was a woman who used to contribute back at the Financial Freedom blog. That was the earlier blog I had. And there's still archives you can get at the site for that blog. And I forget her name now. I forget her name. I'm sorry. But it's been a long time since she posted. But she was a regular for a while and an excellent poster. And I think she was a fan of Dave Ramsey. And there have been some others. I had one guy write into the site. He said, oh, you remind me of Dave Ramsey. I don't know what it is I said. I don't know Dave's, Mr. Ramsey's. I don't know Dave's. I'm going to call him Dave. I don't know Dave's work all that well. I've heard lots of good things about him, though, from lots of different people. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of blogs that where people started the blog because of what they learned from Dave Ramsey. My wife, I don't listen to the radio all that much, just when I'm in the car, and I don't drive all that much. I don't have to drive to work. I've heard the radio show, I think, once, maybe twice. My wife likes it. She hears it on Saturdays. She drives somewhere, and she hears it. So I've heard lots of good things. Almost never do I hear bad things, but I think it was that woman who used to post mentioned one time that he says you can get 12% on stocks, and then my ears pricked up at that. I'm like, uh-oh, that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound at all good. And since then I've listened for that, and I've heard other people say the same thing. A lot of people. So I haven't personally heard Dave Ramsey say that, but I've heard enough people who I think are trustworthy say it that I'm sure that it's so. And so, it brings us back. It's sort of a full circle thing. It's hard. Oh, boy. There's so many issues that intersect here. So many issues that intersect. You know, when I talk about the goons, the goons are led by John Graney. And the reason why John Graney organized a goon squad to destroy me and anybody else in our community who talks honestly about safe withdrawal rates is he has a study on safe withdrawal rates, and he doesn't want to correct it. No way, no how does he want to correct that study. No way. Now, I mean, that's bad. In any other field of human endeavor, everyone would acknowledge it's bad. You know, the example I used to give was if you were a trampoline manufacturer and, you had to do some sort of test to sell this because kids will get hurt if the trampoline doesn't hold the weight. And if you found out that the trampolines you were selling were incredibly dangerous and instead you put out an advertisement saying guaranteed 100% safe, they'd put you in jail. But for reasons that I don't fully understand, that's not how they do it in Investo world. You can say anything, it seems. You can literally say anything. And people won't get mad that you told tales. They'll get mad at the people who report that you tell tales. That's who they get mad at. So on the one hand, I think John is wrong to not correct the study. On the other hand, it's as I think I mentioned in an earlier podcast, I have learned over time, to my shock and amazement, this is much bigger than John Graney. He ain't the only one doing this sort of thing. Lots of people do it. And I think it's fair to say Dave Ramsey's doing it. You know, you can't... Can I say Dave Ramsey's the same as John Graney? No, because Dave Ramsey has never, you know, he hasn't threatened to kill anybody who told the truth about stock investing, and John Graney has done that. So that's a big distinction. However, the other side of the story is John Graney, and I think this is one of the things that gets him upset, is that when he says the safe withdrawal rate is 4%, he's wrong. But he's to a considerable extent, he was being more conservative than Dave Ramsey was. You can't take the safe withdrawal rate and translate it into a stock return exactly. But there is a connection between the two. When the stock return, at times when valuations are high and the stock return, the expected long-term return is low, the safe withdrawal rate is also low. So there is a connection. And when Graney is saying the safe withdrawal rate is 4%, implicit in that is the idea that stocks might not return much more than, say, 6%. That's implicit in there. You can't be precise, but it's implicit. And, of course, the 6%, the 4% number is a real number. It's a real withdrawal. It's adjusted for inflation. So if you're saying the 6% real, that might translate into a nominal return, you know, without an inflation adjustment of about 10%. So Graney is giving a number lower than Ramsey. So I do think that's fair. Graney is more conservative in his investing advice than Dave Ramsey, I think. Now, there are other things Graney says that are sort of off the wall, so maybe that's not true across the board. But if you looked only at the safe withdrawal rate issue, I would say he's a little bit more conservative than Ramsey. And boy, that ain't good for Ramsey, because Graney is Bonkerville. I'm sorry. Sorry, John, but you're Bonkerville. Some of your investing advice, I believe. Rob Bennett believes. So I knew when I heard about this 12%, you know. Now the thing is, if it was just somebody out there, you know, I'm sure there are lots of people out there giving bad investing advice, so I don't have to write about it, you know, it's not my job to track everybody down. But with Dave Ramsey, I knew as soon as I heard it, I have no choice. I'm gonna have to write about this, because Dave Ramsey he's now, I don't know enough about him to talk in detail about it, but he is up my alley. You know, he's sort of in the same school of thought, because Ramsey, in many ways, is the inheritor of the Joe Dominguez vision, I think. You know, Joe Dominguez changed. He revolutionized money advice with his book, Your Money, Your Life. And as I say, thousands of blogs are based on Joe Dominguez. Well, thousands are based on Dave Ramsey. So these two people, they taught a new approach to money management, and frankly, they did great things helping on the savings side. I mean, Dominguez obviously, but Ramsey as well, and he's sort of following in that vision. And I am in that school. You know, I'm not as big. I wish, but I'm not. So how can I not talk about Dave Ramsey at some point? And if I talk about him, how can I not talk, now that I've, you know, criticized John Graney for getting the number wrong, and Bill Scholler, and Mel Lindauer, and Taylor Larimore, and John Bogle, if I'm going to criticize those people, how can I not criticize the guy who's really in my camp? You know, John Bogle is, he's in my camp, but not, you know, sort of yes, sort of no. I mean, I think he is in my camp, but not as much, certainly, as Joe Dominguez. And I don't think as much as Dave Ramsey. And so if I'm going to criticize the guy not in my camp, as I say, if you're far enough from my camp that you're irrelevant, I don't need to discuss. I mean, Jim Cramer is sort of like that. Jim Cramer's a guy that, you know, I don't really feel I need to comment on him. He says some things. I've heard him say some things I don't agree with, but I don't feel I need to comment on him because he's outside my camp. But Bogle's not. Bogle is in that. He's aiming his advice not at the people trying to outsmart the market. He's aiming his advice at normal middle-class people just trying to, you know, do something good with their money. And that's what Ramsey's doing, and that's what Dominguez did. And that's what I try to do. So I feel, I knew the first day I heard it, I'm going to have to discuss this. If he's telling people 12%. And I put it off. You know, I didn't feel I had to address it right away because I've got a million other things I've got to do. So it's not the highest order of business. And of course, it's not terribly pleasant business because I don't want to do anything to alienate Dave Ramsey himself or, more importantly, all of his followers, which are in the millions. I want those people at my website, so I don't want to be telling them, you know, how many points am I going to win saying Dave Ramsey is not a straight shooter among those people. Now, I've been attacked mercilessly for doing that with Graney and Scholler and Bogle and Lindauer. So I always have a standard response, and you know, of course, the standard response is. One, the goal is to help the middle-class workers, not the big shots. So that's where my loyalties have to lie. And if I'm going to say that with Graney, I have to say that with Dave Ramsey, no? The answer is yes. So I knew I had to address it. And what prompted me to address it is there's a post. I'm following a guy. There's a guy who writes a blog called the Bad Money Advice blog. It's probably badmoneyadvice.com, I think. And I'm interested in this guy because I asked him, I've been asking a number of people to if they want to run guest blog entries where I write something on, you know, the negatives of passive investing and they run it at their blog and it exposes the ideas to their readers. And I wrote to this guy and I said, you know, this is a case of bad money advice. You know, he has a good blog. He writes about bad things people are saying about money to correct the record. And I said, look, there's nothing out there worse than passive investing and nothing more influential. It's affected millions. It's caused this economic crisis. So, you know, this is right up your alley. But he said, well, I can't do that because he says, if I were to let you write that guest blog, I'd have to then disagree with you because I don't agree with what you're saying. I said, well, fine, disagree. You know, how could that be a bad thing? Run the blog entry and then the next day run a blog entry saying why you think I'm all wrong. That's a learning experience. He didn't do that, but he did write back an email where he suggested to me that he has somewhat of an open mind. You know, he said, I've looked at some of the materials at your site. And he said, you know, maybe not enough. But the suggestion was that he does, you know, he's toying with the idea. So that encourages me that, you know, maybe we'll get a convert there in time. So I've been following the guy's blog and commenting from time to time when I have something I feel I can say of, you know, some little use or some value. And the other day, just yesterday, well, he's written three columns about Dave Ramsey. I didn't see the first one. I saw the second one and I thought it was pretty good. And then I saw this one yesterday. I thought it was very good. And when I read it, I said, boy, this guy, and I recently had an experience at the Money Blog Forum where all these people, again, you know, I probably give too much background, but I feel it helps fit all the pieces together. But at the Money Blog Forum, you know, I was trying to help people there understand the realities of stock investing. So I started a thread there and lots of people participated. Great thread. And then one of the Graney goons came on and they took the whole thread down. And I thought that was wrong. They removed this resource for all these blog owners. So I started writing to the blog owners directly with the guest post, and now the Graney goons have been invading these other blogs, threatening people, you know, all this sort of thing. And so then I went to the blog forum, the Money Blog Forum, and I said, we need to organize to protect ourselves from these goons. They're trying to destroy our businesses, our sites, threaten our readers, intimidate. And some people took exception to that. And of course, when the leaders take exception, it scares everybody else from speaking out. I know that some of the blog owners are afraid of the goons because they've told me. They said, I'd like to run your guest blog, but I'm afraid. I'm afraid of what these people will do to my site. So I know it's an issue. And where else, you know, should you go to address that issue than, you know, a forum for blog owners? That's, obviously, that's the group that needs to organize to protect themselves. But I think, and I don't know what the story, these people were very rabid, about not doing anything. And they eventually took that thread down. But of course, you have to wonder why. And you can't, my usual reaction is to say, well, they don't want to see criticism of passive investing. But you can't really say that because, and these were not grainy people. These were not grainy goons. These were owners of blogs. The grainy people did not participate in the thread. So it was not them. You can't pin this one on them. And it was, you can't even say that they were, they probably are largely defenders of passive investing, but you can't say that's the motive. It's certainly not the sole motive. It could be a contributing factor. But several of the people who got very hot and were saying this thread should be taken down, you know, we can't allow people to hear this, they were people who had run guest blog entries. In at least two cases, that was true. So they were open-minded enough. They may not agree with me, but they were open enough to, you know, publish my views at their site. But then they got very agitated about the idea of taking action on the goons. So there's something else going on there. My sense, and I can't see into people's heads. All I can do is speculate. My sense is, and this is from reading between the lines, is that it's an institutional problem. That, you know, they would make comments like, oh, you're new here. You know, how dare you question your betters? You know, these people, you know, some of our friends believe in passive investing and they promote passive investing at their sites. And, you know, you're suggesting they're wrong, you know, and how dare you? And you haven't been around long enough. And they're my friends. You know, you got this feeling like it was all this club. You know, you're not high enough in the club to be questioning passive investing. Because if passive investing is wrong, some of my friends are going to have to change their blogs. They're going to have to change their advice. And that made them angry. That's the feeling I got. That it's an institutional thing. And a really strong indicator of that was that one of the guys, Lazy Man and Money, and he had run one of my blog entries. I think he deleted it now. He said, oh, I'll get even with those goons. I'll just take the whole thread down. Oh, that'll scare them. Yeah, that'll upset them a lot. So he said, why don't you go to JD? JD is the owner of a hugely successful blog, Get Rich Slowly, I think it's called. Get Rich Slowly. Good blog. I've seen some good stuff there. I don't read it every day, but I've seen good stuff. Hugely successful. And have him look over this safe withdrawal rate question, which is the substance here, the cause of the campaign of terror. And you know, he can report on the, he can report in his blog what he thinks, and then other blogs can pick up on it. In other words, if JD checks it out, other people are going to believe it because he's not a newcomer. And I thought that was a great idea, so I wrote JD, and he responded. I thought his response was sort of strange. You know, it was like, on the one hand, he's responding, which is good and nice and helpful. But on the other hand, he's like, oh, I can't read more than 6 words. You know, I get this all the time. You know, I get these people, they respond. Index Universe did that. They said, Rob, we'd love to run your articles, but your articles pass all the normal tests, and that's not good enough, because if we run your articles, Mel Lindauer is going to be mad. So in your case, we got all these additional rules. And one of them is you have to answer every question anyone's ever had about investing, but you can't, your article can't be more than 6 words, because, you know, that's our limit for you, not for anybody else, but for you. I answer every question, but, you know, it can't be more than 6 words. Interesting. And that's sort of the kind of response I got from this JD Get Rich Slowly. You know, it was like, well, Rob, you know, I'm sympathetic to you and you make good points, but, you know, I can't read more than 6 words, you know, and you know, sort of limits what you can say. And then he said, well, maybe you want to submit a guest blog. So I said, yeah. I said, that one I can respond to in 6 words. I said, hey, I'll get you a guest blog by the end of the, you know, let's see, 6 words. I'll send guest blog soon. You know, 5 words. You know, I'm on the pod. I'll send guest blog soon. So I sent that. And then, you know, within an hour, I had him a guest blog. And I thought it was a great one. It was, I wrote a guest blog on the thing I did a podcast on Saturday, the calculator I have that shows that even the passive investors, even the people who were wiped out in this crash, are better off today than they were before the price crash. I think that's amazing, and yet it's true, because the drop in valuations so much improves the investing picture that you're better off to have lost the third year of your life savings, because now you'll be able to earn decent returns in the future, which was impossible at those valuation levels we were at before the crash. So I said, here's a great, I'm writing for a big blog. I ought to write a super great entry. And I did that. No response. No, not even no thanks, just nothing. And I just, anyway, I think what's going on is he doesn't want these issues out. He doesn't want his readers finding out about them because it's going to come back to him. He's going to have to start looking into this, and he doesn't want to. He wants to stick with passive investing. Or he has friends that, it may be that he has relations with people who advocate passive investing. I don't know the details, but that was true in Index Universe. They would run this stuff from the bogleheads.org, where Mel Lindauer was a big shot. So they don't want to talk about the realities. So that's a problem. And I think that was a problem with Vanguard Diehards. I think Mel, part of Mel's problem is he's connected with Bogle. And, he would always say, oh, Bogle's my mentor. And he feels if he criticizes Bogle, he loses his connections. You see, everything's connected in this world. And when an idea like passive investing gets out there, people develop businesses rooted in that. And then when the historical data, when new research comes out showing it doesn't work, they're like, wait a minute, I spent 10 years building my business. I'm going to tell everybody it's all wrong. And my answer is, well, yeah, I guess so, No personal offense intended, but if it's wrong, you've got to tell people it's wrong. Anyway, I should probably do a separate podcast on that, on all the institutional problems that make it so hard for people to change. But that's going on, and if you're going to do what I do at my blog, you want to have, Dave Ramsey on your side, and you want to have Dave Ramsey's followers on your side. And so if I do a podcast that says Dave Ramsey's not a straight shooter, that's going to hurt me. Probably. But when I, in each case, what happened to me is I ultimately was shamed into doing the right thing. That happened with the safe withdrawal rate issue. I knew from the first day I posted at Motley Fool that Graney's study was wrong, got the numbers wrong. And I held off because I was scared. And then what happened was, Wanderer was the most popular poster at the board. He was this huge asset to the board community, and Graney started attacking him. And I said, what kind of person am I if my friend's being attacked and I don't do anything? And I know the study they're using to attack him is wrong, and I don't say anything. So it forced me to act. I knew I had to act all along, but I was scared, and that forced me. And same thing here. So I've known I was going to have to talk about Dave Ramsey, but and his 12% stock return thing. But when I saw this guy, this other blogger do it, I said, hey, I'm telling this other blogger he's got to tell the truth about passive investing, and he's scared. Well, if he tells the truth about Dave Ramsey, I should back him up, even if I'm scared. So I did. I wrote a comment, and I said, great, great job. It took a lot of guts. I admire you for doing this. Once you do that, you've crossed the line. It's like once I told the truth about safe withdrawal rates, I could never again lie about it. In other words, the days before I told the truth, you could shade the truth. It wasn't really lying because I wasn't 100% sure I was right. I could say, and I did. I always hinted that I didn't think that the high stock allocation was the way to go. I always hinted that people should look into tips and stuff like that. So I didn't lie, but I didn't tell the full truth. I didn't tell all I knew. And once you come out and John Walter Russell does a study showing you're right, well, now it's a lie. It's a flat-out lie if you say, I think these studies are the cat's pajamas, I think probably the most dubious thing I ever did was when I gave Graney's study a 5-star review at Soapbox, And I think it was dubious in that I should have pointed out the flaws. I should have the guts to do that. However, I do think it's a good study. I do think people should read it. I do think it advanced our knowledge of how investing works. So at the time, I was nervous, but I didn't think I was wrong to say it was a 5-star study because I think it has great value. All of the work we've done at passionsaving.com, was influenced by that study. The fact that it was wrong doesn't mean it didn't influence us. It showed us the importance of safe withdrawal rates. Showed us how to, you know, and of course, much the methodology is analytically invalid because it doesn't include valuations, but it includes the other stuff, includes everything but valuations. So, you know, I don't think that was 100% wrong, but I do think it was cowardly. I do think it's fair to say I was a coward. And so what happens is somebody else behaves in a non-cowardly way, and that shames me. And that's what happened with Wanderer at Motley Fool, and that's what happened now with Bad Money Advice, the Bad Money Advice blog owner. And so now I said, all right, tomorrow I'm going to have to record. You know, I wrote my comment yesterday applauding the guy, and I said, tomorrow I'm going to do a podcast, you know, telling the Fuller story. So what did the last prefatory comment I want to make is this is endemic, this problem. It's endemic in the money advice field. What goes on is that, especially in investing, I think it's true. I think it's true even on the savings side, but it's really true with investing, because the problem you have with investing is, say you're trying to become a money advisor, you know, you want to make millions helping people with their money, and say you're totally a good person, you're not doing it just for the money, you want to help people, and Dave Ramsey helps millions, right? He's helped a lot more people than Rob Bennett. You know, when we stand before our maker, I'll be able to say, hey, you know, I gave better numbers on what you know, what kind of stock return you can expect, and I think I'll get points. I hope I'll get points for that. But Dave Ramsey can say, yeah, well, maybe I didn't give such hot numbers on the stock return, but millions of people learned how to manage their money more effectively because I wasn't such a bullhead like Rob Bennett, and I was willing to bow to the winds and tell people what they wanted to hear on investing, and then they listen to my stuff on saving, and they're better off. That's the counter. I think he's wrong. I think if that's what he's, I think that's the primary motivator with Dave Ramsey. I don't think the primary motivator is he wants to make money. I don't know. I can't see inside his head. But I think he wants to help people, and I think he has rationalized what he's doing. I think he feels that the way to get people to save is to exaggerate what they can get, what return they can get on their investments. So if you tell them 12%, they say, wait a minute, if I were to save more, I could retire years sooner. And the bigger that number is, he feels the more motivation they're going to have to save. And that's what he wants to have happen. And so he rationalizes it. I think the same thing's true with John Bogle. I think John Bogle believes that the middle-class investor should be in stocks, and that's true. And I think that John Bogle believes the middle-class investor needs a simple way to invest in order to get in stocks, and that's true. And I think John Bogle believes that the average middle-class investor has a hard time understanding the effect of valuations. And I think that is to a large extent true, but on that one, I think a big part of the problem is John Bogle. I think if John Bogle and others would tell the straight story, people would understand it. But the problem is people are confused because what they hear from the experts doesn't match what their common sense tells them, and it messes up their minds. They can't think straight. But I think Bogle has good intent. And I think most of the others who promote passive investing, I think that's true. It may not be true of every single person, you know. But I think it's true of the ones I have had dealings with. So, but I think they're wrong, you know. In other words, I guess what I'm trying to say is this becomes at some point a dividing line. You've got to make a decision. And I've made a decision that the thing to do is to tell the truth. And I mean the full truth. I don't mean some technical truth where you can say, oh, passive investing works if you wait 30 years, which it does. You know, that technically that's true. But people don't want to know what's going to work in 30 years. People want to know what's going to work in 5 years or 10 years. You got to tell that truth. So it makes the story a little more complicated. It doesn't make it all that complicated. I don't think anything I say is all that complicated, but it does make it a little more, I suppose. I actually think passive ends up being more complicated because it's so confusing. You get into all this crazy stuff and this emotional angst. And if you just told it plain from the beginning, it wouldn't be complicated. I think passive investing makes it complicated. But that's, yeah, of course, I'm biased because I don't like passive investing. So maybe I'm rationalizing. You see, that's the trick here. You've got to You got to see through the rationalizations of Bogle and Ramsey, and you also got to see through the rationalizations of Rob Bennett, because who am I? Am I better than these people? I think I'm right on this question. In that sense, I think I'm better. I think I'm right. But they think they're right. So it's your job. It's your money. It's your job to see through the BS. If I'm BSing you, you have to see through it. Because I can't if I believe it. You know, if you believe your own BS, you can't see through it. That's the tragedy. That's the human tragedy of all this. Everybody doesn't always believe their own BS, but sometimes people believe their own BS. That's just a fact. That's a fact. And I think that's a big factor. And see, the trouble is that in the investing field, the pressures to believe your own BS are enormous, because when stocks are at the dangerous levels they were at from 1995 through 2008, they can't get to those levels without 90% of people being overinvested in stocks. It would be impossible for stocks to get to those valuation levels unless 90% were wildly overinvested. Well, if 90% are wildly overinvested, they're not going to want to hear what the historical data says about what their long-term return is going to be, are they? So right out of the gate, 90% don't want to hear what you have to say. They're going to hate you if you tell the truth. So how are you going to build a successful business that way? It's that's the rub here. That's the trick. Now, my vision is, if we all told the truth, if we all sort of held hands and you know, sung kumbaya and said, I'm going to tell the truth, there wouldn't be any more insane bull markets or economic crises, you know, stock crashes. We would do away with both. We would cut off the highs and cut off the lows. And stocks would just sort of provide, you know, not exactly 6% real every year, but something in that neighborhood. Some years 4 and some years 8. But you wouldn't get these 25% returns or 50% negative returns. That's my vision of the future. But for that, we've got to educate people. And to educate people, we've got to open up the internet to honest posting. That's why I'm always drilling on that, because that's the key to everything. Anyway, this podcast is on Dave Ramsey. And whether he's a straight shooter or not, and that's part of the puzzle. If we could get Dave Ramsey telling people this stuff, giving advice as good on the investing side as he gives on the savings side, you know, look out world. And one of the first things I thought to do was to send an email and tell Dave Ramsey about it. But I went to his site and I wasn't able to find a place where I'd reach him. It looked very corporate to me. It looked like it was going to get, you know, go through 10 filters before it got to him. And if it goes through 10 filters, it's not going to make it to him. But if I had a way to reach Dave Ramsey himself, I would do that. I doubt if I call the program. I could try, but if I call the program, I question if they're going to let me on. Because I'm not one of these people that's going to say, oh, I have a question, you know, please help, you know, great guru. My message would be, your 12% number is wrong. Now, maybe I should try it. Maybe he would let that on. Maybe his people would let that on. I don't know. But I got a bad feeling. I got a corporate feeling when I went to the site. But I would love it if somebody would bring this podcast to Dave Ramsey's attention. And I'd love it if he would, you know, if he thinks I'm wrong, fine, say so. But there's a lot of evidence that 12% number is Looney Tunes. And so, you know, that's what I want to focus on for the remainder of the podcast. But now the trick is, as I say, but I did want to just finish this endemic point. It's very hard to tell the truth about stock investing, because it means cutting off all of your sources. And that bad stuff, the temptation to spin is present for the entire time prices are insanely dangerous. And that was 13 years. That was 95 through 2008. So it's you know, you're cutting off your lifeblood for 13 years. That's hard. And now, in order to get the economy back on track, we've got to explain to people why they lost all their money and what they need to do so it won't happen again. And that means getting the Dave Ramseys of the world to admit that they were wrong about those numbers. And good luck. You know, good luck with that. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. And, you know, I try to do it in as charitable way as possible so that people don't feel embarrassed to any greater extent than you know, can be avoided. But some embarrassment is unavoidable because of all the human misery that's been caused. So it's all a human problem. You know, you always come back to that. It's none of this has to do with the numbers. The numbers, anybody can check the numbers. The, you know, numbers are just public information. The hard part is, how do you say to people that they were wrong and that they've caused great human misery without causing them to become defensive? That's the trick. I feel that I try. I think if you check my record, you'll see I try very hard to do that. But boy, that's a hard job. That's a hard job. So why? Let's talk about why the 12% number is so wrong. And there was a woman there at the blog entry that Bad Money Advice had on Dave Ramsey. You know, he's the one who shamed me into doing this. And she said, "Oh, it's not fair." You know, he mentioned the 12% number in the blog entry, and this woman said, "Oh, it's not fair to blame him." This was before he was saying that before the crash. He didn't know there was going to be a crash. My answer to that is, well, why didn't he know? I believe he didn't know. Well, she's probably right. But why didn't he know? You know, Dave Ramsey has a lot more resources than Rob Bennett to research. He could pay people to research the internet and find out the realities. I can't. I've got to do it myself. And yet I found all this material. Why can't Dave Ramsey do that? I think it's because he doesn't want to. He likes the popularity that follows from telling people they can expect 12% returns on stocks. He likes that. He's human. And I think part of the job is we all need to tell our friends that we understand they're human, we understand they're subject to temptations, but we don't want them to go so far out on a limb. We know that they don't want to hurt people, and we need to pull them back. We want to pull them back. And if we got a lot of Dave Ramsey followers sending him emails saying, "Hey, Dave, listen to this podcast from this guy, Rob Bennett," I think we could pull him around. I do. I don't say it'd be easy. I think it could be done. And if we pulled him around, like I say, watch out, world. You would then have thousands of blogs. All the blogs that follow Dave Ramsey would be telling the true story. Once Dave Ramsey gave the signal, just as this Get Rich Slowly guy could do it. This Get Rich Slowly guy could give the signal, I'm going to tell the truth about safe withdrawal rates. Well, there'd be hundreds of blogs that the next week would pick it up. Same thing with Dave Ramsey. If he says, "I'm going to tell the truth about what sort of stock return you can expect at a time of insanely dangerous prices," lots of blogs would pick it up. And it would just spread and spread and spread. And then we're all off the hook. We're all telling the truth. We're all investing more effectively. We're all retiring sooner. You know, our economic crisis comes to an end. But, you know, getting that key to turn has been a job. It's been a job, fair to say. So I wrote a post there explaining to this woman who asked the question where I presume he comes with the 12%. I don't know the answer. I don't know for sure. But it's not hard to figure out how he could come up with it. The truth is you can come up with any number you want. If there are no limitations on how much spin you can apply, you can come up with any number you want. There was a guy at Motley Fool that Grainy went after. Okay? Just like I go after Grainy for inflating the numbers, Grainy went after this guy. This guy was saying, 25%. You can get 25%. I'm retiring and I'm going to count on 25%. And Grainy's like, Are you nuts? Count of 20. Who are you that you're going to get 25%? The average return is 6.5. You're going to get 25. How are you going to do that? He said, "Oh, I've been doing this for 3 years now, and my average return is 25%, and I get smarter every year. So if anything, maybe I'll be 30%." Now, were his statements factually true? Probably, because this was in the late 90s and the entire market was providing 25% returns in those days for those 3 years. So it's entirely possible that this guy really did provide 25%, get 25% returns. And it probably, in his mind, I'm sure he did think he was getting smarter every year. He's reading more articles, reading more books, has more experience. So why not use a 30% return to plan his retirement? Well, Grainy says that's wrong. You see, Grainy didn't like that. Grainy drove him off the board. I don't think he should have been driven off the board, but I think it's right to point out that his thinking was flawed. But no more flawed than Grainy's thinking. I mean, it was worse in the sense the numbers were farther off the mark. But the flaws are no more obvious. It's all a question of how you want to spin. You can produce any return expectation you want if you're determined to spin it. I'll give you a dramatic. The most dramatic number I've given you on the positive side is 25%, right? 25% real. Could you make it 25% negative? Could you say you should expect a 25% loss? Absolutely. At the price levels we were at during this time when Dave Ramsey's been saying you should expect a 12% on your stock investment, we were at price levels that we've been at three earlier times in history, total of four times now, three earlier and now this time. You know what the average price drop is on those four occasions? 68%. So if I wanted to, I could go around saying, oh, expect a 68% loss on your stock. You know, is that true? Well, I don't think it's true. The 68% is the worst moment in time. So there was a moment in time when you're 68% down. But if you held, you know, a year later, you might only be 30% down. And 10 years later, you might only be 10% down. So 68% is not a fair number. But under the rules of Investo World, it's a number you could use. It's no more an exaggeration than 12% positive. All these numbers are just, they're specious. Now, what number do I use? The number I use is at the top of the bubble. You know, the number changes depending on the valuation level, so there is no one number. But, Ramsey's been giving this number over a series of years. So at the top of the bubble was January 2000. At that time, this is the stock return predictor at my website. This calculator does a regression analysis on the historical data to tell you what that number is, what your expected long-term return on stocks is. At the top of the bubble, the number was a negative 1%. That means if you invested in stocks, you should expect to receive, in 10 years, an annualized real return of a negative 1%. Now, I don't know you're going to get exactly that. That's the most likely. But it could be that you'll be a little on the lucky side, and instead of a negative 1, you'll get a positive 1. Or it could be you'll be a little on the negative, you'll be a little on the unlucky side, and instead of a negative 1, you'll get a negative 3. You see? I can't tell you precisely what your return is going to be. I can tell you that the odds are it's not going to be good. The odds are heavily against you, and you shouldn't be heavily in stocks when the odds are so heavily against you. But I can't tell you when that price drop's going to come, and I can't tell you exactly how big it's going to be. I think that's the best we can do. The negative one number, I think, is the best we can do. But he's saying, you know, Dave Ramsey's saying positive 12. Well, how do you get from negative 1 to positive 12? Well, it's easy. Three steps. One, ignore valuations, step one. That's what the passive investors do. They don't usually say 12. They say 6.5 real. Well, it's easy. How do you get from negative 1 to 6.5 real? Ignore valuations. If you just took an average of the historical data and you didn't count the valuation level that applies on the day you're doing it, the number you get is 6.5 real. It's easy. So are the passive investors lying? Well, you know, it's like Clinton said. He said, you know, it all depends on what the meaning of the word is. Well, it all depends on what the meaning of the word lie is. If the historical data shows you your most likely long-term returns a negative 1 and you say it's a positive 6.5, some people would say that's a lie. I tend to be in that camp. It's a lie. But if you're going to take a legalistic approach to it and say, is there a piece of paper somewhere that says 6.5% is the average return? Well, there absolutely is. I imagine if you were to sue one of these people, they could pull out that piece of paper and say, look, this is what I meant. The average return is 6.5, and you know, it's true. So what is it? Is a lie? Is it not a lie? I think it's a lie because it hurts so many people. People obviously think, they don't think you're talking about some piece of paper somewhere. They think that they're going to get a 6.5, and they're obviously not likely to get that if they're investing at the sort of price levels that applied. So they're not going to get it. And the suggestion is that they stand a good chance of getting it. Now, there is a small suggestion they could get it. I think even at the top of the bubble, I don't know the precise numbers, but there's a range of possibilities. And, of course, as you get farther out on the range, the likelihood is less and less. But I believe there was a tiny possibility you could get a return of 6.5. You know, I don't know. I'd have to look at the calculator to tell you. It's probably 5%, 10% chance. So it was a long shot possibility, but there was a chance. So does that make it okay? Well, you tell me. I say no. I think we should all start telling the real numbers. Numbers. So we stop hurting people. I look at it from the standpoint of, are we hurting people? That's my test. See, that's more of a feeling-based approach. But a lot of the people in the investing field are come to it from a logic-based approach. And they say, if you've got a piece of paper that says 6.5, hey, that's fair. All's fair in love and war and investing advice. Any number where you can come up with a piece of paper is okay. I'm against that. That's what it means when I call my book Investing for Humans. I'm saying humans hear this information. Humans suffer from the bad numbers. Let's stop giving bad numbers. That's my take. So it's easy to get from a negative 1 to a plus 6.5. Now, how do you get higher? How do you get all the way up to 12? Well, there's three levels of spin. That's just level 1. Level 2, a number you hear all the time is 10%. You'll hear that all. That's probably the most popular number if you ask, what's the return on stocks? 10%. How do some people, the passive say 6.5, Rob Bennett says negative 1. How do you get from 6.5 to 10? Ignore inflation. See, step 1 is ignore valuation. Step 2 is ignore inflation. Ignore inflation, it's 10%. Now, you're not really getting, the reason why they call the 6.5 real is, that's the real gain. The other 3.5, the inflation junk, that you're not enjoying any gain. That's nothingness. Your money, you have more dollars, but they're worth less. But again, if you were to sue these people and say, where's your piece of paper? They have a piece of paper saying the average return is ignore valuations and ignore inflation and you get 10%. You get that on a piece of paper. Makes it true, right? So how's Ramsey get from 10 to 12? I don't know. But my guess is he just looks at a shorter time period. Like I said, that guy on Motley Fool, he was saying 25% real he could get. Because he just ignored, or maybe it was 25% nominal. I don't know. But he just said, I'm just going to look at 3 years. You look at 3 years, it's 25%. Ramsey, I presume, maybe goes back to 1980. So he's not, most people go back to 1920, the modern era. If you only looked at 1984, where the number would be higher, maybe it would be 12%. So it's how many levels of spin you want to apply. And I guess my thought is, I love what Dave Ramsey's doing on the savings side. Helping millions of people. You know, he's a hero, just like John Bogle's a hero on the investing side. But he's engaging in spin every bit as dangerous as the spin Bogle's engaging in. And if I'm going to call Bogle on his spin, I've got to call Ramsey on his spin, whether I like the guy or not. And I like Bogle. I like both of them. So I feel that I have to say it. Dave Ramsey's not a straight shooter. My vision is a world in which we can all start telling the truth about saving and investing. And that means we can all be straight shooters. But for that to happen, we all have to feel that we're not hurting ourselves by telling the truth. We have to feel we can tell the true numbers and we're not going to get millions of Dave Ramsey fans angry at us. And the key to that is getting Dave Ramsey to say, hey, I haven't focused on this in the past. But I've always had some worries about that 12% number. I wasn't so sure. It sounded a little too good to be true, but I checked the numbers and it looked to be right. And I have to admit, I did want to persuade people to save, and that influenced me. But now that we've had the stock crash, a lot of my followers, my readers, my listeners are in great pain. And I thought about this the other day, and somebody happened to send me this podcast by Rob Bennett, and I thought about it and I said, wait a minute, maybe I'm engaging in some spin here and maybe that's hurting people. Maybe that's hurting the people I most want to help. I'm not going to say 12% anymore. I'm not sure what I'm going to say. I'm unsure. I have to investigate more. I have to talk to more people because I think we need a national debate on this. But I don't have confidence in that 12% number anymore. See, that's what I would like to, that's the fruit of this that I would like to see. Dave Ramsey said that, he changes the history of investing overnight and saving. because it would add integrity to his saving advice. His saving advice has been effective. It's helped people. But as long as he's using that 12% number to entice them, there's a lack of integrity there. Is that not right? I think it's right. So I would like to see Dave. I like Dave Ramsey. I like what he's about. I'd like to see him start giving better numbers. I'd like to see him become a straight shooter. I'd like to see all of us become straight shooters. And I think it means that all of us are going to need to acknowledge that we have not been straight shooters in the past. And that, you know, I always think it helps to say that includes Rob Bennett. I wasn't a straight shooter from May 1999 through May of 2002 when I was scared of what John Graney would do to me if I told the truth about safe withdrawal rates. I wasn't a straight shooter. And there may be things today on which, you know, I didn't do this Dave Ramsey podcast until what? April 23rd, 2009. Why not? Because I was scared. So I haven't been a straight shooter. Let's say it was 3 years ago when I first heard about this. Well, I haven't been a straight shooter from April of 2006 until April of 2009. Do you see? It's like dominoes falling. It's hard work. Looking at how you've led people wrong, looking at how you've caused human misery. Hard work. It's not expensive work. It doesn't cost money, but it's hard. It's not intellectually hard. It's intellectually a piece of cake. It's emotionally hard. So, the 12% number is dangerous. It's filled people's heads with fantasies. At the prices stocks were selling at before the crash, the number was a lot less than 12%. It was negative one at the worst. You know, at other times it might have been 2%. Was a likely return on stocks, 3%, something like that. Not 12%. And there are other cases of this. I mean, that's the one that really matters. But there are two others I want to hit on just quickly because they came up in these blog discussions. One was a discussion at the Frugal Dad is another blog where I participate. I like the Frugal Dad blog a lot. And Frugal Dad is a big fan of Dave Ramsey. So again, it took a lot of courage on his part to do a blog entry he did not too long ago criticizing Dave Ramsey. And he said, look, I love Dave Ramsey, but I think he's wrong on this one. And Dave Ramsey's doing some sort of thing where he's saying, you don't need to participate in this recession, in this downturn. You know, just opt out. And it's similar to the 12% thing. I think the reason he does the 12% thing is, one, he wants to simplify too much. And two, he wants to encourage people to save too much. It's good to encourage people to save. But, you know, you can't cross lines. And I think he crossed the line there. He's telling people to opt out of the recession because he doesn't want to encourage doom and gloom. Right on. I don't want to encourage doom and gloom. I try to present a very positive message. I try. And the way out of this is to help people regain confidence in the market and in our economic system and in our political system. So doom and gloom is the worst thing. So Dave Ramsey is 100% right in his instinct. His instinct there is good. But he's overselling it, is what Frugal Dad was arguing, and I agree with Frugal Dad. And Frugal Dad, where he had a hard time, was he was saying, Dave Ramsey's telling people they don't need to participate. Well, how about my mother? He said, my mother had maybe an aneurysm. I'm not sure. She had some sort of physical problem, and she was hospitalized, and she, you know, her savings was wiped out. That, of course, happens. And then on top of that, she lost a big part of her savings in the stock crash. So she's getting this double hit, not little hits, you know, huge double hit. And this is a person, of course, that, you know, Frugal Dad loves. You know, it's his mother. And so, you know, all the rationalizations that maybe kick in when we give bad advice to other people don't work when you're dealing with your mother, you know. So I think just emotionally, it rubs him the wrong way to hear somebody who he respects saying, oh, opt out of this recession. You know, it's cold. And I think Frugal Dad is right on. It's not intended to be cold, but it is. It's too simplified. If your message is, don't give in to doom and gloom, say that, because I don't think frugal dad would tell his mother to give in to doom and gloom. You know, that's a positive, healthy, good message. But this idea that we, you know, that everybody who's feeling bad about the recession is just a baby, that is, it's cold, it's cruel, it's false. It's oversimplifying. It's missing an important piece of the story. And that makes it wrong. It makes it a kind of lie. Okay? When I say Dave Ramsey is not shooting straight, is not a straight shooter, what I mean to say is he's not fully shooting straight. The aim should be to fully shoot straight, not partway. It's not enough to say, well, what I'm saying is true for 80%. You know, I don't know if it is or it isn't. But even if it's true for 80%, that's not good enough. I think the reason I don't think it's even true for 80% is I think a big part of getting people out of the doom and gloom is telling them why they lost so much. And that means telling them why you're wrong about your 12% number. Your 12% number led people to believe in stocks at a time they shouldn't have been believing in stocks, and that's caused great human misery. So let's help people not fall into doom and gloom. But part of that is being straight with them and telling them what we did, all of us, to cause this hurt. So I applaud Frugal Dad, as well as Bad Money Advice. You know, the bloggers that write those blogs. The third example is on the mortgage question. And that's what the blog was about at Bad Money Advice. That was the focus, that Dave Ramsey's advice on mortgages. Dave Ramsey says pay off your mortgage as soon as you can. Well, it's one of the reasons I think he's great. One of the reasons I say he's very much in the same school as me on the savings side, because I tell people to pay off their mortgage. I've got an article at my site saying pay off your mortgage. I think it's wonderful advice. But there's two big problems. One, there's a certain intellectual dishonesty that goes on in it. And the Bad Money Advice guy pointed that out. He said, people say don't pay off your mortgage because you lose the tax deduction. And he said, oh, I'd rather not, you know, he did some mathematical exercise where he says, oh, you're better off not paying, you're better off not having to pay at all. You know, you're better off not having to pay $100 than to have to pay $100 and get a $30 tax break, you know, in other words, because you're still 70 out. Well, of course, that's true. That's trivial. Trivial, obvious point. The point of the issue is more complicated than that. That's simplifying it to an absurd level. The flaw there is that yes, of course you're better not to pay anything. But when you have the mortgage, you're paying 100, you're getting 30 back. So yes, you're out 70, but you've also got $100 that you didn't pay that could be invested in something. That's what the people saying keep a mortgage are saying. In other words, I agree with Ramsey. I agree with paying off your mortgage in most cases. I think it's been greatly undersold. The benefits of paying off your mortgage have been greatly undersold. But it's intellectually dishonest to pretend that there's no argument the other way. And so he's giving this glib thing. And because a lot of people don't understand money in any great depth, a lot of people fall for it. So people are falling for the intellectually weak arguments to keep your mortgage, that this tax break is all that matters. And people are also falling for the intellectually weak argument not to keep the mortgage, to pay off the mortgage. On both sides, people are engaging in gamesmanship with the purpose of appealing to the emotions rather than reason. And that's why most middle-class people don't understand saving or investing, because of all these emotionally pitched arguments. So I don't think Dave Ramsey is helping the saving cause by doing that. He's helping the saving cause, I think, by telling people usually to pay off their mortgages. That I agree strongly. But you can make that your short little, you know, advice tip. You can say, maybe you could say, instead of saying pay off your mortgage, you could say give serious consideration to paying off your mortgage. I think that's good advice. But when you say pay off your mortgage and then you give these intellectually lame arguments, you're hurting the cause, because you present the whole cause in a bad light. People who understand the benefits of the tax break are going to dismiss it. So I think it's a mistake. And I don't even think it's true that everyone should pay off their mortgage. There are cases where you got a mortgage at such a good rate that it's a mistake to pay it off. I usually think people, if it's a close call, I think you should pay it off, because the emotional benefits of paying off the mortgage are so great that I think they overcome the tax break in most cases. But not in all cases. And that's part of the story, and we need to tell people that. And those, what I always call for is balanced advice. You know, yes, you want to hit people's emotional hot buttons. To some extent, that's what selling is about. And if you don't sell a little bit, nobody's going to understand you. Nobody's going to hear your advice. So you have to sell. But I more and more have come to believe that overselling, you know, giving money advice is a combination of selling, marketing, and truth-telling, you know. And there's too much focus on the marketing. It's just too much of a temptation for too many people. And then people form camps. Once they've fallen for the marketing and they start endorsing it themselves, they don't want to admit they're wrong. And then they become hostile to people telling the other side of the story. So it's a big mess. So I think I applaud Frugal Dad. I applaud the bad money advice guy. They're putting their necks on the lines, telling how Dave Ramsey got things wrong. I think all Dave Ramsey fans need to do more of that. And so I think I was wrong to be a coward for so long. But he shamed me. The bad money advice guy shamed me. And I think I've done the right thing recording this podcast. And you know, it'll be released in a couple months. But I think I did the right thing. And I hope that I have the courage to continue to do the right thing. And I hope the Dave Ramsey followers have the courage to open up their hearts and their minds to the other side of the story. Because I think we would be helping Dave Ramsey and all his followers if we can get him to acknowledge that this 12% thing and the mortgage thing and the opting out of the recession thing are not 100% straight shooting. Are not. And all the good he's done, which is tremendous, he can do that much more by coming clean, coming fully clean, becoming a fully straight shooter. We can create money advice matters. And when we get this, when we get better advice out to people, we're going to create a lot of growth in this economy. And we're going to help people to avoid the doom and gloom. We're going to help give people hope and confidence. I believe this. I really do believe that. Everything I say is pitched at that. Good luck with your investing strategies.